From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
This whole election is being rigged.
You know it, they know it, I know it, and pretty much the whole world knows it.
The elections are governed by the 109 election authorities. Each one uses different systems, et cetera. Some use the same, but there's no uniform system. So to rig an election, you'd almost have to get involved with each of the 109 election jurisdictions or certain select ones.
Watch Philadelphia. Watch St. Louis. Watch Chicago. Watch Chicago. Watch so many other places.
That's Donald Trump, of course, the Republican nominee for president, calling out Chicago among the cities where he says there could be voter fraud. We also heard from Jim Tenuto with the State Board of Elections. He says widespread fraud just doesn't happen these days. We'll talk about that and more on today's show. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also today, Amanda Vinicky, our State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Brian Mackey, IPR reporter. Our guest is Rick Pearson, political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He's also host of the Sunday Spin, the Sunday morning radio show on WGN Radio. Rick, good to have you on once again.
Thank you for having me on.
Rick, I'm going to start with you, actually. Chicago, known for that phrase, vote early, vote often. Should there be a concern as to whether the results are on the up and up?
Well, there's always concern about vote fraud and when it comes to the city of Chicago, and everybody knows the history. But officials this time point out that, you know, the progression of technology is so great, and the fact that now here in Chicago you have electronic polling books that are at every precinct, so that people trying to vote multiple times, it's an online database that basically really prevents it. And for any kind of real main massive fraud scheme to work would require a great deal of individuals, and it's just not the way it used to be here with the ballot boxes floating in the river.
But certainly that history really has tainted Chicago and probably a lot of other jurisdictions in the state of Illinois because it has happened before. And that feeds into a lot of what Donald Trump is talking about and some of his supporters say they're worried about.
Sure. And, you know, the idea of, you know, dead people voting, those kinds of things. But again, when you have you could go back to really like I think the last big kind of big fraud that occurred in Chicago was really back in 1982, and that was the famed election between Republican Governor Jim Thompson and former Democratic U.S. Senator Adlai Stevenson, a race that ultimately was decided by the Illinois Supreme Court, Thompson winning by 5,074 votes. But you had a grand jury investigation that led to 58 convictions, precinct captains, election officials. A grand jury concluded that 100,000 of the 1 million votes cast in the city were fraudulent. That year was also the start of the first time of punch card voting systems in Chicago. And another factor, too, was you had a single party vote that you could cast then, which no longer exists. So you go back from that technology and you jump ahead forward, it would be very complex scheme to put on a fraud of that scale.
Charlie, you covered that race, and you remember those the fallout of all of that.
Yeah, and what I found interesting was that all that went on in Chicago had nothing to do with the race for governor. The African-American community was getting ready to nominate and then elect Harold Washington as the city's first black mayor. The white ethnic community was very determined for that not to happen, and so both factions of the Democratic Party were looking at the general election as kind of spring training to get their troops out, get as many votes to the polls as they could. And because they were all Democrats, they naturally voted Democratic, which helped Adlai Stevenson, who I would venture to say was not very high on the priority list for any of the ward committeemen back in the day.
Amanda, you talked with the State Board of Elections, and they said something similar about the entire state, that the technology has improved to a level that widespread fraud just is not happening, not really able to happen. Yet we saw earlier this summer there was a computer hacking that took place that accessed thousands of voter the voter rolls in Illinois and voter information. So, I mean, how can they be so sure that somebody couldn't get access to a system and do something, you know, that's nefarious?
Right. I mean, you have had politicians from various stripes and other entities making claims about voter fraud prior to Donald Trump, and particularly with citizens who are in the United States illegally, migrant workers. Are they doing? I know I'm on an email list for, I believe it's Americans for Limited Government, that has sent various press releases arriving in my inbox encouraging Trump to sue to make sure that voter rolls are all right. What the State Board of Elections has said is, first of all, Sean, as you noted, it's technology, yes, but it's also just that you have 109 different election jurisdictions. This is all done it's all done locally. So you would really need an expertise in 109 different places to know how their systems work in order to be able to truly mess with it on a widespread scale. Further, State Board of Elections says, you know, we do testing. This is all something that is done in public. You better believe that there are representatives of campaigns there, election judges. Then after the testing, a memory card, the machines themselves sealed, locked up. And when they are once again put in the public eye and ready to be used come election day, that also happens under the watching eye of election judges. So those were kind of their arguments. But you're right, Sean. Yeah, they were hacked for all practical purposes. It was a cyber breach. And they don't talk to, when I spoke with Jim Tenuto, he isn't, you know, the computer expert or anything, but he says that, yes, Illinois continues to work with the federal government on this, that it is, the State Board of Elections is 100%, is the figure he used, certain that no voter information was altered. It was about 200,000 voters' information accessed, but he says nothing was actually changed and that the problem has now been remedied. I think that it does give people, you know, a reason to give pause. Clearly, we have seen the ability for emails to be leaked and such. But Tenuto saying that this is no longer a problem, clearly it is something that after the Illinois breach made national headlines, you have, it's not just Illinois anymore. You have the federal government working and keeping a watchful eye on this.
And I think we, Amanda, we should just emphasize maybe the nature of this hack. As you pointed out, this was voter information. This is not like malicious code being implanted to double count votes for one candidate and not the other or anything.
Because that's not something the State Board of Elections does.
Exactly. That's all decentralized at the 109 different election authorities there are in Illinois. I think there was another stat I read this week. I think it was in an AP Q&A that Arizona State University has a project that tracks election fraud. They found more than 2,000 instances between the 2000 and 2012 elections nationwide. In Illinois, there were just 23 cases. And you think about millions of votes were being cast. There's four presidential elections during that time, several gubernatorial elections, just 23 cases of voting problems. They also quoted the state's attorney in Kane County saying that he had established a voter complaint hotline for 15 years now and has not had a single major violation of election laws. All the calls they get are about people campaigning too close to the polling places, things like that.
Well, so why does this seem to have such legs for Donald Trump and his supporters especially? I mean, it's certainly red meat. When he talks about it, you know, out on the stump, people cheer. They get behind this. They seem to think there is some conspiracies.
It occurs to me that Donald Trump's most ardent supporters are people who believe that the established political and economic system has failed them. They think it's rigged, not in the sense that only elections are rigged. They think that the job market is rigged. They think that the tax system is rigged. Everything is structured in a way to benefit the political and economic elites to the detriment of the rest of us.
And if you worked at the Maytag plant in Galesburg, you might, you know, have some justification for thinking that way.
And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that they're not all that wrong. But on the other hand, the notion that you can rig a national election, I think that's kind of far-fetched because it is so decentralized. Each state reports its results and then sends delegates to the Electoral College. And then within each state, I think most states have decentralized elections. So here in Illinois, for example, in Sangamon County, all the individual precincts, you'll go and you vote and there's a paper trail. And then the results are sent downtown to the county clerk's office and he compiles and releases them. And there are news media at all of these sites reporting what's going on. There are judges at the polls representing each political party, as well as, in a lot of places, watchers from the campaigns. So it's not like somebody's doing this behind closed doors and they got some kind of nefarious computer program that's going to alter the vote total. It's just not technically feasible.
But I have to wonder one thing. When you have Donald Trump telling out there on the stump every day that the vote's rigged, the vote's rigged, I don't know how that provides an incentive for his supporters to go vote.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Rick, let me switch gears here just a little bit, because there are certainly things that Trump supporters have talked about during this campaign, and then all of a sudden there is some video that surfaces involving the husband of an Illinois congresswoman, Robert Creamer. He's the husband of Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat. Video surfaced involving him. You wrote about it. Tell us what this video was all about and what was in it.
Well, this is a undercover video that's the work of conservative activist James O'Keefe and what he calls his Project Veritas Action. And O'Keefe is the one who has also done things involving abortion and Planned Parenthood, those kinds of things. Heavily edited, sometimes video that is spliced together. A lot of questions about how authoritative these videos are. Nevertheless, O'Keefe and his undercover workers secretly filmed Creamer as well as another Democratic operative and put together kind of and with using leading questions to both of them to kind of give the impression that these guys were actually part of efforts to instigate violence at Donald Trump rallies as well as ways to scheme to do vote fraud activities involving unregistered, undocumented people in the United States.
So you said there's questions about how the video was put together and all, but Creamer later came out and sort of distanced himself, I believe, from the Democratic National Party, and that might lead some people to think there is something to these allegations.
Well, I mean, whenever he has surfaced, there's always some controversy involved. He has a firm called Democracy Partners, and while Creamer is not necessarily well known, yes, he's the husband of Jan Schakowsky, the congresswoman here up in Chicago. But he gave Rahm Emanuel his first college job as part of a political activist. He worked on Obama's presidential campaigns. He was very active in Rod Blagojevich's campaign for governor. I mean, he has been part of Democratic politics for a long time. But, at the same time, while having all of these clients throughout the years, he also was founder of a consumer group called Illinois Public Action at the time. And he got involved in a check-kiting scheme to keep the business afloat and ended up serving 5 months in federal prison.
I'm sure you've heard from some people since you wrote about this. Republicans are probably saying, aha, we've got somebody on tape actually admitting to these things. But again, there's not necessarily it's tough to say that this is, yes, a smoking gun or not.
Well, and one of the things that in the video, there's another worker saying that they were part of this conspiracy that led to Trump to cancel his March 11th pre-primary rally at the University of Illinois Chicago Pavilion. There seems to be a lot of boasting going on here. Our reporters who were inside and outside the arena that night, it was far from having one type of orchestrated organization. It was a lot of individual protesters involved.
Brian Mackey, I'm going to go to you on another topic here. And Charlie Wheeler, you can certainly weigh in on this as well. There's a statewide ballot measure. It would change the Illinois Constitution, would create a so-called transportation funding lockbox, meaning all those fees and taxes that you pay toward roads, bridges, transportation needs, all of that would go for those purposes. It couldn't be used for other things. But there are some questions about it. And actually, I'll start with you, Charlie. What's a concern that you see with that? You had some.
Well, the object of the proposed amendment is to make sure that money that is raised from gasoline taxes, from license plate fees, from driver's license, is only used for transportation-related purposes. And the rhetoric suggests that every dollar should be used for building and maintaining roads and bridges. The reality of the language would seem to open the door for stuff that maybe the proponents didn't envision or didn't want. For starters, it says that the amendment says that these transportation-related revenues can be used for enforcing and administering the laws. So, for example, money could continue to be used to pay for the state police. Money could still be used to pay for Jesse White, the Secretary of State, keeping the records on motor vehicles and driver's licenses. And it seems to me that the door is open wide enough that should the General Assembly choose to, it could say, well, something like two-thirds of the court cases at the circuit court level involve traffic offenses. Therefore, we should use some of these gasoline taxes and license fees to help pay the cost of the courts at the circuit court level and thereby reduce property taxes. And the other part of it, the other concern I would have, is that there are a number of programs that are clearly not related at all to transportation that are funded basically by people deciding to pay more for a license plate so that money could go to a particular cause. You're an alum of the University of Illinois, so you buy a University of Illinois plate. Costs you an extra $40, and then that money goes into the scholarship fund. There's money there for wildlife habitat. There's a special plate for conservation. There's a special plate for cancer research. There's dozens of these special plates, and none of this money, very little of the money, goes towards transportation. And so if the Constitution says these dollars have to go for transportation, would that jeopardize these programs?
And, Brian,
and I know Brian wrote about the impact on DNR.
And go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, DNR was really hurting. The Blagojevich years were not good to DNR's funding. Their general revenue had been way down. People were talking about the state parks crumbling. Roads were being closed. And so after a lot of wrangling and negotiating, there was a $2 fee imposed on license plates. This was instead of people had talked about maybe putting up gates at the state parks and charging admission. Instead of doing that, everybody in Illinois, when you renew your license plate, there's a $2 fee that goes to DNR. That's represented $19 million in some recent years for them. DNR is nowhere mentioned in the language of this constitutional amendment. There were some of these things about special fees that were read in the legislative intent. That's when they debate the bill on the floor. The lawmakers read what they intend for this to mean. Courts, you know, have taken varying views on that. Sometimes they give it deference. Other judges think that that's not appropriate. You should just stick with the, you know, strict language of the Constitution itself. I did talk to Senator Bill Hayne, who sponsored this lockbox on the floor. He said that because DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, one of their core functions is maintaining the roads in state parks, they, you know, therefore this money can keep flowing to them even with this transportation lockbox put in place. But, you know, Charlie mentioned a little earlier the door being left open for funding traffic court. I thought to myself, well, U of I has a lot of roads. I mean, maybe they could get some money from this. The prisons have roads. You need roads to get to the prisons. And so I'm not sure if that logic necessarily holds up. This could be hashed out by the lawyers. It's not clear to me who would necessarily sue over how this is enforced or what would happen there. But, you know, there are other people who are worried about DNR. And one of the most curious things I thought was DNR's reaction itself, which was They would not go on tape to talk to me for the story. They sent a one paragraph email that said, we'll wait, I'm paraphrasing here, but it said, we'll wait and see what the voters do and evaluate any effect on us after the election.
Well, we'll see. Amanda, let me ask you, Amanda, because there's a reason, though, that this is getting a lot of attention and a lot of support in certain circles, and it is because of how the government has tapped into different funds throughout the years.
Well, right. I mean, when you have money that is supposed to pay for roads and infrastructure being diverted instead to the state's general fund and paying everything else under the sun, then you don't have as much money going into roads. And so that is what is behind this entirely. Of course, there are some, I think, other perspectives to look at it on it. It's basically being promoted, and there's a whole lot of money flowing into commercials trying to get voter support by the people who would be advantaged by it. And so, the businesses, the unions that actually get more construction jobs for building any of the roads, then it would take in this time when clearly Illinois is without a full year's budget and has had to fudge a bit and look under the couch for every penny and maybe bend the rules a little bit in order to pay for priorities. Is this going to take away flexibility from the government in the future to do what they have done? Sure, it's protecting the roads, but what are you getting on the downside of that? So something that I guess has been interesting to me, Sean, is that there hasn't been any truly vocal opposition. Brian and Charlie have just attested to some of the potential drawbacks. You have heard the handful of legislators that voted against this, I believe, had an editorial or two, and now you've had other subsequently editorial boards come out and saying that they also believe it isn't a good idea. But when you have money so tight, why is it that you don't have some of the other organizations, teachers, unions, et cetera, saying, hey, wait, we want a constitutional amendment too? Why them over us? Why their pot of money versus our pot of money? And you can look at it and see when Illinois said lottery money is going to education, and that is still something that people talk about. Technically, it does. It's just that then the rest of the money that went into education went somewhere else. So I think that there's a lot more to look at as well in terms of what this could mean for state budgeting going forward.
Well, in the case of the lottery, I think you always need to recall that the lottery was not enacted originally for education. The lottery was enacted as part of the deal that created the Regional Transportation Authority, and it was seen as a way to replenish state general funds that in the future were going to help subsidize mass transit operations in northeastern Illinois. And this argument in terms of using motor fuel taxes, driver's license fees, and so on for other purposes, that's been ongoing like forever. Once upon a time, there was money that helped pay for the courts. At one time, the state police was entirely funded by the road fund up until 1983, from the time the state police was created and we first had motor fuel taxes and license plate fees 100 years ago. But I think what brought this to a head was a year ago, well, it would have been March or April of 2015, the legislature, to close a gap in the 15 budget, swept, or to be less diplomatic, stole money from a lot of different funds, including something like $250 million from the road fund, to go into the state's general operations. There wasn't any relationship to, well, the Secretary of State does license drivers, or, well, the state police do patrol the highways. It was just money going for everything. And that's, I think, what was the final catalyst that caused this amendment to be crafted, passed, and submitted to the voters.
A couple of minutes left here. That constitutional amendment is at the top of the ballot, but there are a lot of races on the ballot this year, including some state legislative races as well as U.S. Senate race. Rick Pearson, want to pick your brain just quickly and get your ideas on what you're seeing as far as some of these down ballot races, maybe how the presidential race is factoring into those.
Well, certainly there's a lot of concern about with a controversial figure like Donald Trump, how that affects Republican candidates down ballot. And, most particularly, you see in the case of Mark Kirk in the Senate race, you see in the North Shore congressional race with Bob Dole, the Republican trying to hold on to the seat against the guy he beat, Democrat Brad Schneider, the kind of distancing and the hope for ticket splitting. And, you know, this is going to be a very interesting election to watch to see, you know, how much ticket splitting really does occur. There's also concern, too, about on Republican side about just dampened turnout since, you know, presidential campaigns and presidential years, that tends to be what the driver is. And, of course, while there was a lot of talk early on about perhaps in Illinois a lack of enthusiasm factor for Hillary Clinton versus having Barack Obama on the ticket, at the same time, you know, like I said, things like you've got Donald Trump talking about how the election's rigged, dampened turnout on Republican side, particularly, you know, among moderate suburban women who tend to be that kind of swing factor in statewide races.
And just about 30 seconds here, Rick, but you've got you've been watching some of these legislative races as well, and certainly in the suburban areas, the Chicago area. Do Democrats see a real opportunity there because of Trump, because of Hillary Clinton?
I think it's still more a Democrats kind of trying to hold on to and playing defensively, while Republicans obviously are the aggressor in some of those suburban districts that are targeted. Republicans with the newfound money from Governor Rauner really going hard at those. But there again, there's that factor of turnout, particularly, you know, what does Trump mean for turnout?
All right. Time for our notes from the field. Amanda Vinicky.
Well, the Bobcat lottery was a very popular thing, and we are approaching November when people will, for the first time in Illinois in many decades, actually be allowed to kill those cute little cats. So if you were in the running, if you were one of the nearly 7,000 people that was hoping for one of the 500 permits to be able to hunt a bobcat, you can find out now. That's available on the Department of Natural Resources website.
And Brian Mackey?
Yeah, a group calling itself the Pay Now Illinois Coalition. It's a group of contractors for the state. They do social services, taking care of people with disabilities, substance abuse problems, things like that. They have asked the Illinois Supreme Court to review. They've sued the administration, contracted, asked these companies to keep doing what it does while at the same time vetoing. Governor Rauner vetoed budgets that the Democrats had passed, saying they were out of balance. These groups are using the contract clause in the Illinois and federal constitutions to say that they should get paid. It'll be interesting to see whether the Illinois Supreme Court wades into this and how it might affect state workers who have been getting, according to this group, more than $3 billion worth of salary since the budget impasse began 16 months ago.
And Rick Pearson.
For the fifth straight quarter, Democrat Tammy Duckworth has outraised Republican U.S. Senator Mark Kirk. In this most recent quarter, July through September this summer, Kirk raised $1.2 million. Duckworth raised $4.1 million. They began the month, Kirk with $1.4 million, Duckworth $4.3 million. Mark Kirk still, I mean, it shows nationally the vulnerability that he faces as perhaps the number one target for Democrats who are trying to use this election to regain control of the U.S. Senate.
All right, that will do it for State Week for this week. Members of our broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.